Hello and welcome to the Little Minds Big Ideas podcast with the Early Years Network. Today's episode is going to be a fun one.
My favourite subject.
His favourite topic. It's all about food.
I love food.
Yeah, me too.
And food's great. Food. Food's very expensive though at the moment.
Very expensive at the moment. And I do apologise because I'm not feeling very well today. So Ben is going to take a lot of the lead on this week, aren't you?
Yep.
Because he loves food.
I get to talk without being told to stop talking.
He does.
I can just chat.
But I'm here to pop my opinions in and do the intro.
and cough quietly in the background.
Yes, I'm really sorry if you've got to edit out a lot of my little coughs.
No, I thought today's episode, it'd be good to talk about all things food, nutrition, healthy habits, bad habits.
Food, glorious food.
All the good stuff. And I think the first thing, if we're going to talk about nutrition and food in early years, I think we have to talk about context.
Right.
Because context is king. And though a lot of the meals children in their first few years will eat will be at nursery, they'll also eat a lot at home, obviously.
Of course,
You're talking about often breakfast for some children. Dinner will always be eaten at home, and then they'll have lunch and snacks in between at nursery. So a lot of the big meals, especially dinner, i.e. that's always the big nutritious meal.
Interestingly though, a lot of settings will do a big hot meal at lunchtime, and then when kids go home they won't have that hot. So a hot meal does usually come in that early year setting.
Okay, so. But either way, I think it's important to talk about the context of what we're seeing at the moment, because if we look at the data, and I have pulled up some
he's got his numbers
information around. I mean, if we go back to 2018 when this report came out by the NHS,
this is pre-COVID.
It was shown that 18% of children between the age of 5 and 15 ate the recommended 5 or more portions of fruit a day. So that's only 18%. That's not high.
No, that's not high at all, is it?
You'd love to see it higher than that. And I think...
You would love to see it higher than that, Ben. You're right.
What worries me is since then we've gone through COVID, and since then, from a geopolitical standpoint, we've seen the war in Ukraine.
Yeah.
And the detrimental effects that's had on energy prices, and most importantly, in terms of what we're talking about today,
food
inflation.
Yeah.
Because food inflation in the last 2 years has hit some months as high as 15%.
At the moment, isn't it?
It is crazy. And at the moment, it looks like it's curbing. I think, don't quote me on this, I think it's around 4%. This month.
Yeah.
And it looks across Europe and Western Europe that it is starting to curb is that level of inflation. But prices are right now at a very high point. I'm sure I don't need to tell anybody listening to this podcast. I'm sure everyone is fully aware of how expensive food is at the moment. And then obviously what comes with that as a knock-on effect is a term called food insecurity. And it's a metric that's tracked by Food Foundation, which is an organisation, and other organisations across the UK. Mm. The horrible things that's been showing is, even from 2022, it was showing that around 25.8% of households with children have been suffering from food insecurity in the past month. And that's back in 2022. I think prices and what's happened with inflation.
But then you have to think, in 2022, if a lot of people had been furloughed or lost their jobs, that could have played an impact on...
2 years on from that?
Yeah, but it depends when people went back to work. If you lost your business, if you're a small business, the circumstances, it's still not.
But
nice.
I would guess the increase in the inflation that we've seen, the aggressive inflation that we've seen across food, has probably had a bigger detrimental effect than that COVID has at that point in time. So I think looking at it, they were estimating around 4 million children in the UK were coming from families suffering from food insecurity. So today we didn't want to just sit down and talk about food and say, you should be giving children this amount of fruit and vegetables, these nutrients should be going in their bodies, which we are going to come on and talk about. But we didn't want to open it up talking about that and almost suggesting parents are bad parents if you're not getting these nutrients or food into it.
We understand the realities of what the bigger picture is everywhere for everyone.
Yeah, you can't ignore the context of it.
No.
But in saying that, I do think we should be working hard. I mean, this isn't a new phenomenon. I remember as a child watching Jamie Oliver's TV programme going into
take
schools.
Take out turkey dinosaurs from schools. No more Twizzlers either.
And I think more pressure should be put on the schooling system, because I still don't think it's any better. I remember when I was in school, way after that TV show.
Oh, bacon sandwiches for breakfast.
But the food was shit.
The canteen. Oh, sausage sandwiches.
And it's like the
pizza on a Friday. Oh.
It's like the other day when I spoke to you, we were looking at, there's Austal that opened up somewhere in the UK, or a new wing or something like that. And the main thing food-wise, cafeteria in there was a Greggs that they opened up.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying there's anything necessarily wrong with Greggs, in moderation, et cetera, et cetera. But if we've got an issue of obesity across the country, it's no wonder we've got an issue of obesity when the first and only Greggs food is a bloody Greggs.
In hospitals.
So
she'll go to Greggs order.
I can't say I've ever really been to Greggs.
What?
I think I went when we got free sausage rolls at one point when I used to work in London.
Oh. But
that's it.
All right then.
Well, I don't know.
I reckon you'd get one of the like bean cheese melt things. Maybe one of the ones that's got...
No. It'd have to be something like a steak.
Yeah, steak.
Bake, whoever it is.
Oh, maybe.
Good steak bake. Though I remember, actually I have had steak bake from Greggs. I remember everyone's bit into it thinking it'll be tepid at best. It burned the roof of my mouth.
Oh, I'm just like the sausage rolls.
Sausage roll girl.
Greg from sausage rolls. Greg's from sausage rolls from Greggs.
We'll get Greg from sausage rolls. Right. Why nutrition matters then? Emily, why does nutrition matter? Tell me.
Well, it's important for children to understand a healthy diet, isn't it? Because we always talk about those first 5 years and them being impressionable. So nutrition, laying the foundations of the importance of nutrition at a young age is important.
Yeah.
But lifelong understanding of it.
You can sort of split it into two, can't you, why nutrition matters in early age. You've got point number one in terms of actually getting nutrients into their body.
Well, yes, there's that, yeah.
And then you've got point number two, education and experience around food in itself. Because, I mean, if you look at the science behind healthy eating and nutrition in early years, education is a massive part of it because...
Oh, yeah, huge.
When neuroplasticity is at an all-time high, when the brain is being developed and you're laying the foundations, introducing them to what we would quote-unquote healthy foods, so your fruits and your vegetables, and then having an understanding of it, you're creating positive relationships with that food.
That is really important, those positive relationships. And it's something that most people will probably deal with later in life, those teenage years, early adulthood, of that everyone's relationship with food differs, but trying to create those positive relationships with food at an early age is important. And I'm not saying that if you do create those positive relationships at an early age, that won't change growing up, mm-hmm. because the society that we live in now with social media and all of the different things that teenagers and young adults have to put up with now, I'm not saying that a positive relationship as a young child won't change when you grow up, but it is still important to build those roots so that if you do sway and your relationship with food does differ and get a bit rocky, those foundations of what you know hopefully will help to make a relationship with food better.
Yeah, because I think at first, when we're talking about early childhood, they don't have the pressures of worrying about body image.
No.
Not really, though. No. That hasn't quite crept in.
It's interesting, though, because there's a lot of children, young age, that can identify like fat and thin and things like that. Yeah. So, and I'm not saying we can't use those words, because if something is like we took the song of the hot cross buns in a shop, round down fat with a cherry on the top, it is.
Yeah.
But it's when children, and we talk later on about role models, but if children are hearing these terms being used to shame people or et cetera, and they bring that into a setting, if there is a child that is bigger or,
yeah.
but not bigger, but just different body shapes and sizes like we all are, and they get called fat, that can be damaging, but it's something that a child has learned. So I think it's really important that we teach, it's also about teaching that everybody's body is different and healthy foods and healthy bodies look different on everybody.
Yeah. And I think it's teaching them what a healthy body is, because a healthy body isn't stick thin. No. But also a healthy body isn't excess fat and being huge, and because that is unhealthy. And then you could go down the issues with when it comes to diabetes and obesity and all that jazz. So I think it's explaining the power of it. We've sort of gone off a little bit of where I was going to go with this first
Sorry.
Point. But I think it's explaining, and this more comes probably into like secondary education, the amount of times I've spoken to young teenagers and you've talked about food and the importance of it, and both males and females, and food as a powerful tool shouldn't be something we're scared of. Because even if we, a lot of times I've talked to boys, if you want to be an athlete and you want to have, you know, a bit, big muscles and all this jazz, food is a necessity. You have to eat. And being a teenager is the perfect time to actually put on a bit of blubber as you develop your muscles. Because if you want to build muscle, you have to be in a calorie surplus. So you can't do it by hardly eating any food and think you're going to get a big, strong muscles and become a sportsman or whatever it might be, because it won't work like that. You have to be in some sort of calorie surplus, not huge, eating stupid food, but getting the nutrition in your view and being in a caloric surplus to enable you to grow muscles. Children are the same. Their bodies are growing. Young children, I was going back to, are growing massively. The development of bones and things.
Yeah.
So they need the fuel to be able to support that growth. Yes. So food is our greatest friend. Do you know what I mean? The benefits we get from food and things like that, and healthy and nutritious foods. And on the side, obviously, rewards and the treats that you get with it.
Yeah.
And I just think that it's something as a society, we often sort of polarize and go one of two ways. Yeah. We either indulge and become gluttonous and we are then issues of obesity, et cetera, or you go the other way and you get girls and boys who are scared of food because of societal and social media and what they want to look like. And it's about actually finding that middle ground and educating children around carbohydrates, fats, protein, the importance of all of them and the importance role. You hear so often about parents, oh, I'm going on a diet, I'm cutting out all carbs.
But I couldn't do that though.
But that's something that's so drastic.
I bet there's loads of people like me. I just love bread.
But carbs are your energy.
The energy.
Yeah.
I don't look like I'm full of energy today, but I promise I'm still eating my carbs.
And the thing is, the greatest instruction and the greatest lesson we can give children is teaching children around actually food and calories is much like a bank account. Yeah. Spend too much, i.e. eat too much and you have too many calories, and you will go into debt, i.e. you'll gain weight.
Yeah.
Which in itself is not a problem, but at some point you'll run into health issues if you go too far, and i.e. with debt, if you spend too much money, it's not an issue. If you spend a bit more one month and then you bring it back in the next month, that's just sort of nature of how humans live. But it's the extremes of it. And again, if you... What's the extreme of going the other way? Save too much money? I guess it doesn't quite work that way.
It doesn't work that way. Don't encourage that.
Well, I guess the other way would be you don't earn enough, I guess. You don't work enough.
Sorry, excuse me.
And you're not eating enough food, I guess. It sort of falls apart a little bit that way. But it is like a bank account in the sense of expenditure. Yeah. And in terms of then exercise comes into it and movement, etc. But I think... if we're talking about young children, now let's go back to early years.
Yeah.
If we're talking about young children, one of the biggest things of setting this appreciation for food, this understanding of food, the education for food, is a lot around role modelling.
Yeah, 100%.
Because we know children, like we talk about all the time, learn from experience. So if we're talking about trying to create healthy habits of food and healthy relationships, it stems from the adult.
Yeah.
And the parents in its life. And if you turn your nose up at broccoli, if you turn your nose up at sprouts and green, nutritious vegetables are full of fiber, children will learn that.
Yes.
But if they come from a household where, I don't know, they're very much pro-vegetables and you get them in, you eat them every night, then a child will grow and have those habits.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And it's the same in setting as well. If we go, oh, who wants to eat the broccoli? And you talk about broccoli negatively...
it's going to catch on. Yeah.
Building those habits.
There's a family on TikTok that I have been following for a little while, and I watch their videos every single day, actually. And mum's called Danny and daughter's called Eloise. And Eloise has got learning difficulties. She's got autism, I believe. And food was like a massive thing for them as a family.
Mm-hmm.
So every day there might be some people who watch our videos or TikToks that know the family. And they do plate up dinner with Eloise every single night.
Right.
And she has like pick plates because for a lot of children with additional needs, food touching and textures is a big thing. So what mum's done is she's made it like, it's not an issue. It's fine. We can put your food in separate sections.
Mm-hmm.
And every night Eloise tries something new. And she chooses whether she wants to take it and eat it as a dinner or not. And regardless of what she chooses, Danny always praises her for trying the food.
Yeah.
And there was one a couple of days ago where Eloise chose to try avocado.
Mm-hmm.
And after she was like, no, like don't like the texture. Whatever it was, she said no. Mum's like, absolutely fine. Like, enjoy the rest of your dinner. Off you go. And she said to the camera, she was like, I've really had to try hard to not share my view. She's like, because I hate avocado. But she doesn't let that affect what Eloise chooses to try every single day. But she said when she was younger, she went for a phase where she'd only eat apples and one other thing.
Right. Okay.
But at least she was eating.
Yeah, yeah.
She was like, she's eating something, and they've built it up and built it up. We'll have to tag them, because they're, the way that Danny talks about food with Eloise is amazing, because she's got to a point where she will try something every single day, and doing it on TikTok has really helped to video and watch it back. And she talks about it. So that's for when I think about food and then like neurodiversity, it's really interesting to see how people introduce new foods, but don't put that pressure on it.
Which is interesting, because from a neuroscience point of view, we know at this point when children are born, they're immediately attracted to sweet and salty foods.
Yes.
Sour takes time. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about building taste preference and developing a palate and a taste understanding, experience, as we all know, and repetition
yeah.
is really, really important. And introducing children to new foods at first will quite often be a negative reaction.
Yeah.
But over time and time and time and time, and like you said, introducing them bit by bit by bit, and yeah. trying something new every night is a brilliant way of doing it. But then also bringing that repetition back in
yeah,
at some
because
point.
Because there's some foods that have similar textures. So even if she's not liking one of them, but she's tried yeah. textures of the similar thing, eventually, hopefully, something will be a yes.
Yeah.
Even though other things haven't been. But I think it's a really lovely way. And I love watching their videos, because watching her say yes to certain foods is really, really, it's really good. And when we were talking about nutrition and introducing foods, yeah, it's some, so we'll have to tag them.
But it's funny though, as adults, you never really remember when you first ate something. Not really. When you talk about the majority of foods,
yeah,
you talk about something quite niche and I went on holiday and I tried it there. You're like, okay.
Yeah.
But in terms of foods, like even if you try and remember the first time you had even something like an avocado, you probably can't really remember the first time you had it. But and certainly you won't be able to remember the first time you had an apple or peppers or those broccoli or cauliflower. Do you know what I mean? Those types of foods, you won't remember it for the first time. So the relationship and your understanding of it, you build in those first few years, is really, really important and crucial, because it will have a consequence then for the rest of your life. Not many people then get to the age of 18, 19, 20 and go, I don't like them foods, but I'm going to make myself really get into it and try it.
That was like me with tea.
Really?
Seriously?
Just normal tea?
Yeah, like a cup of tea, because I never used to drink tea. I didn't like it. And then the setting that I first worked at, we could have like tea and travel mugs in this, and the cook used to make them, going back a long time. And everyone else would have a cup of tea and I'd be jealous. And I'm like, oh, I want a cup of tea. So I forced myself to like tea, and now I like tea.
Force yourself to like
tea. I wanted to be involved. And when she says, they want a cup of tea, and I'd be like, oh, no, I don't like it. And then you'd be like, don't like tea. And it just all got, so I just forced myself to like it. True story.
So role modelling is a huge aspect of early years, and in terms of setting those initial food preferences,
yes,
those experiences, those repetitions around food, and a child's overall view on certain food types and the diverseness of their food.
It's interesting, because when we think about settings, everybody has a different view on whether staff should eat when the children eat. And I think it's important, but at the moment, obviously, cost of food, et cetera, it's an extra cost to feed the staff, and I fully understand that. But I do think it's important that the children see adults eating the food they're eating.
Yeah.
It's a good way to build that, like say, role modelling, is like, right, well, I'm trying serving, you try serving.
Yeah, yeah.
Things like that. I think it's an important way to.
Sorry, we have some very excited children just running around the forest school.
But I think that's a really important way of helping children to see that adults eat it as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And not just, and I think it's important that they meet the people that are cooking the foods in the settings, and they role model how they do it. And baking is really important, because you are showing them what is going into their foods. So I think it's a debate, because a lot of people say no, like you don't eat with the children, but some places do make meals for the staff that want as well.
Do you know, when we talk about food, and one of the things I was most worried about going into this podcast, it's food is one of the biggest battles for a number of reasons. One is time and ease. Sometimes going to war with a child over dinner time isn't the moment in the time, I'm talking more parents here.
Yeah.
They don't want that at 6, 5, 6, 7 o'clock when they've just got home from work. It's easier to give a child something you know they like, they know they'll eat,
yeah,
and be done with it. Do you know what I mean? I can understand that scenario. Equally, going home and cooking from scratch and making food and everything can also be. So like time constraints and life in general can make it difficult. And then obviously, as we talked about at the beginning, monetary cost and things. Yeah. But the flip side of that, it's so important to be introducing children to
cooking
nutrient-dense food, the understanding of foods, yeah, the cooking element to it.
But cooking with so children important. Is a great way to talk about those nutrients, yeah. And nutrients, sorry, I've mixed the two words up there, and showing them what's going into their foods and the effect it will have on their bodies. But also on the opposite of that, it might help them to understand what they're eating. There's another family on TikTok that actually do that.
Emily spends a lot of time following families on TikTok.
I just like to see how other people do things. And they've started, the children were really fussy eaters and they've started cooking together and now the children eat more.
There's Greg Rutherford as well, who always does his cooking things of his.
Oh, Greg Rutherford and his daughter with eggs. Eggies, those Eggies videos. I always try and make Ben watch them and you're like, I don't. But if you've not watched them, his wife Susie puts them up and they are her vocabulary is incredible. It's when he was on Dancing on Ice and everyone called him Greg and she was going, come on, Greg. And he was like, oh. But yeah, so it's role modeling because they do it so often and they talk about the cooking and everything like that. But I do think people doing it on social media is important because mm-hmm. we're all influenced by social media. So these celebrities that you'd mock me for and I'm watching all their videos, actually, I love to see how they're introducing different things to their children. Yeah. And I think it's a really lovely way to see it. And if we're ever lucky enough to have children, I'd like to think that we would do those things.
Yeah.
Because I can see you in the kitchen making eggies on a Sunday morning. But it's just, I think it's good to share those things. And it makes people less afraid to do it.
Yeah.
Because some people worry about children in kitchen. And of course, you do have to be really careful. But children cracking eggs is something that they can do from a young age.
Yeah. And you just don't give them the big knives, do you?
I mean, no, and you don't let them stand near the hot stove and
but there's just them away. There's just as much risk going to the local park and falling off the swing slides and breaking their arm. Like,
exactly.
Accidents can happen.
But when you think of, okay, let my child cook in the kitchen or let my child go to the park, your instant reaction is the park's going to be less dangerous than that. Maybe. When you think about it, like,
depends where you live and what park it is. What time of night?
But I think it's really important, like we've said about role modelling, that and the exploration of food, let them get involved.
Yeah.
Let them try it. Let them do it. Let them have a go. If they don't like it when they've sat and ate it with you, that's fine. And that's one of my massive bugbears is when we try and say to children, no, eat it, eat it. You put a cheese sandwich in front of me or a tuna salad, I'm not eating it.
But
why as an adult do I have the right to say I don't like that? But we don't expect, they don't give children the same level of respect for that.
The interesting thing is, if as a child you ate tuna sandwiches often, you were introduced to that texture and that flavour a lot. If you were, I don't know, 6 months, 7 months, 8 months, 9 months, a year, you'd probably like it now.
But I had an allergic reaction to fish paste as a child.
If a fish paste did, that's not.
I know, but then as an adult now, but the thing is I still don't like those foods.
Yeah, but I think a lot of it stems. I'm a big believer in a lot of it stems from early life.
Yeah, potentially.
The odds are if you never give your child fish, like because you don't like it.
But I wouldn't do that.
No, but I'm not saying you would. I'm just saying if someone never gave a child fish because the parents didn't like it and they didn't eat it, by the time they get to 18, I would put a lot of money on that child or that adult at that point won't eat fish and they'll say they don't like it. I'd put a lot of money. Yeah. And I think that goes to show the importance of it because if we now talk about the importance of nutrition from the actual overall importance of it.
Yeah.
When you're growing, your bones are growing.
Oh,
your organs are growing. Everything within you is growing. So having, it's like a plant when you grow a plant in the garden, making sure it's got the right nutrients, it's got good soil, watered, all those things. The human body's the same and if not more delicate because you have to have the right combination of vitamins going into it, nutrients. You've got to have the right proteins. It needs the energy and carbohydrates, the fats. All of it, the big picture of it is so important. Yeah. Massively as well then when you talk about children and make sure they get enough protein.
Because talk about children trying to build their muscles and build their strength and those fine motor skills and that doesn't happen if the body's not able to produce those muscles and strength that it needs to do it.
Most adults in the world don't consume enough protein. They don't eat enough protein.
I hear this every day, people, so enjoy.
But they don't. It's the one of the biggest things we neglect.
You are 60% chicken and 40% sparkling water.
But it doesn't just have to be chicken. Like, there's loads of different ways you can get protein in. And you don't have to eat as much as I go to the gym all the time or whatnot. That's an excessive level.
It is.
But there's here and then there's here, and it's good to be around the middle. That's not great for podcast terms, what I've just done, but finding middle ground is really important when it comes to that, and setting children up early with that level of information is so, so important, and making sure, and it should be part of all curriculums across education. It should be, and I'm not saying food is in there to always go cook, but making sure from a scientific point of view, children understand what food's about and the importance of it and what nutrients mean, what vitamins mean, how then it plays a role from a neurological point of view in terms of, that's why we get high levels of obesity and stuff, is because chocolate, high sugary sweet things, high levels of fat, often the combination of carbohydrate and fats, there's like a middle ground. I mean, these companies now know actually from a scientific point of view what the combination is to in terms of fat and carbohydrate to make something that is very addictive. And then it becomes addictive. It releases.
I'm fallen to that, don't I? So I have a sweet tooth.
Yeah. But like, it's often because of what it's doing in your brain.
And the donuts. Donuts are a massive one. Like the combination, like you've said, that carbohydrates and the sugars and the fats, that I put a donut in front of me, I cannot resist it.
But it's because of what it's doing in your brain. It's releasing dopamine across your brain. It makes you feel good.
It does. I do enjoy donuts.
And that's the thing. It makes you feel happy. And food has that effect on people.
It does.
And that's why we're living in a society where it's easier and easier and easier to get hands on food like that. Go back 100 years, a lot harder.
Yeah.
It's now so, but it's easier to get hold of good, nutritious food, but it's also so much easier to get hold of food that's, I don't want to say, I never like labeling food bad for you because everything has a process, but I think.
Unhealthier.
I think there is a difference between sweets and chocolate that are, not manufactured and not processed food, and then unprocessed food. There's a difference there. Like if you have a sponge cake that's been made from whole ingredients and stuff, and that's like your thing and you want to eat, then absolutely. I think it's the cheap processed food you can buy, and that can be packaged as looking healthy as well. It's not just sweets and junk food. You can get processed actual like ready meals and things like that.
Yeah.
They don't have the nutritious profile that as a human body, and a human being you need to put in you. And I think the rise of artificial foods is one of the biggest issues we have.
Definitely, because we...
Especially if they're the cheaper option in the current society and context.
I was going to say.
Big problem.
We often talk in our office about... We all like yogurt and berries. We do. Do we not?
I didn't expect that's what you were going to say. So,
but we were talking about the cost of fresh berries...
It's crazy, isn't it? I love blueberries as well.
Ridiculous. But the small punnets are now costing like £3.
I know.
And then you think, oh, I'll buy frozen ones. But they're not the same. So then you weigh up like, right, well, is it worth it? But they're so good and they're so tasty.
Yeah.
But you could end up spending like £15 on three punnets. So you just think,
frozen,
what is going on?
Frozen food is... excellent hack, especially if you've got a young child and you want into budget.
Oh, yeah.
Frozen fruits and vegetables, because nutrition-wise, there's arguments they're better because they've been locked in at that point of being picked. And they last then, you're minimising waste.
Yes, they are better, but I personally just prefer a fresh.
I know.
A fresh berry. And that's where it's becoming difficult because actually, though, instead of having that for breakfast, if I grabbed...
Nutri-Grain bars. Yeah.
That are...
Shit.
Oh,
no, but they are. That's the
very
type.
Very yummy though. I like a strawberry.
Yeah,
one.
But that's the type of food I would happily go out and have an argument over. It's crap. Like you may as well just eat a chocolate bar at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
there's no difference
because the sugar levels in it are packaged ridiculous.
Very cleverly as looking like a healthy option cereal, but cereals in general are fairly rubbish. Like as a product and as something to be feeding children, like they are the one thing that's probably what's standing and sometimes sold as being healthy. Which, by and large, they're not really. I mean, bread's the same again. Bread was something invented by humans at a time when poverty was a large thing. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, you can buy bread and things like that and it could fill you. Very filling is a big blow for bread, and job done.
We were in a large supermarket the other night, and Tiger bread batons for 28p. I was like, yes. And I consumed the whole thing in 2 days. But that's because I just think it I just love, like, you're right though, it's filling. I could eat bread all the time, but I know that I shouldn't eat as much as I probably do.
Yeah, and I think when you go back to the days of the First, Second World War and around that time, food ration, and even before that, it was a massive part of a staple diet.
Yes.
That made sense. You can just nip to any supermarket you wanted and pick up all these things from all over the world. It didn't work like that.
But also at that time, they were making it themselves from scratch. So it was probably a bit better, maybe.
But as a byproduct, and I think most of us know, nutrients come from fresh fruits, fresh vegetables.
Yeah.
And then your protein comes from your fishes, your chickens, your meats. And again, though, you can also be told, well, too much of red meat is a bad thing. So like, it's finding
everything
balance and moderation.
Moderation,
yeah. And that's why that's what I'm trying to get across in early years. It's not about teaching children, you've got to eat your fruits and vegetables. No, you're not allowed chocolate. It's bad for you.
No.
It's giving them the information and the knowledge. And that should extend from 1 year old all the way through to 18 years old.
It should.
It's about providing them information. Like, you like chocolate bars. Why do you think you like chocolate bars? The science behind it, what it does in terms of dopamine effects and things like that. It's about information and providing with that. Because if I spoke to most 18-year-olds probably on the street now, most of them wouldn't have a clue what I'm talking about.
I think it's when you turn 18 as well as that bringing in of alcohol.
Hmm?
The effects of alcohol and
caffeine?
Weight and things like that, because you don't think about drinks as being part of your nutrition as much as you do food. I mean, I've tried to cut out tea for the last couple of weeks because I have two sugars in my tea.
That's horrible, that, yeah.
And I know that that's not good for me, having two sugars, because sometimes I have three cups of tea a day. That's six sugars. Like, that's not good for my teeth. It's not good in terms of the amount of pure sugar that I'm just putting in. So I've switched to fruit teas and I'm doing quite well. But it's not the same.
No.
Because those levels, that the sugar that makes you feel good.
Yeah.
But that's something you recognise as an adult. Okay, I understand what I'm doing in terms of drinks.
Some human beings are built differently. Like, we all eat for pleasure to a degree, but in terms of emotional regulation and our feelings, some people eat more to help with that than others.
Oh, if I've had a bad day, I go home and eat. I don't go home and drink.
You eat more. I'm sure you don't mind me. You eat more certain types of foods at times to help with regulation, things like that. You do.
Food does help me cope with things, yeah.
Absolutely. Whereas other people, less so. You know, other people can be very robotic towards food.
Yeah.
And they deal with their emotions and things in a different way.
Yeah.
They might go on a 20-mile run or something, or they might shout at someone. Like, do you know what I mean? They would deal with that either well or not well. Or
a 20-mile run or shout at someone. I'm just sat at home on my own eating Tiger bread. Not hurting anybody else.
Or they might play on the PlayStation on game, or they might go play sport, or they might go to a spa thing, or go for a swim, or like, do you know what I mean? Like, people deal with things in different ways.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I'm trying to get across. And humans and the makeup of humans is all different, and we deal with things differently. And though you might find that that's the way, it's about finding a balance, I think, is what I'm trying to say. And it's about understanding that element of it. It's not always going to work like that. It's not always plain sailing.
No.
Children are going to like sweets. And we're not sitting here and saying you should never give children sweets or chocolate. It's not
realistic. If you never give children those sorts of things either,
yeah,
they're going to want them as they grow up, and then that could lead to the opposite effect. Of
they'll find it and they'll binge on it.
Yeah.
And that's completely an unrealistic, and it's a stupid thing to sit here and say when we're talking about nutrition. I think when it comes to about nutrition, and I think if we then switch it really back now into early years and earlier settings, it's about ensuring that your teams have good knowledge around food.
Yeah.
Because like we said, children are affected by role models, they're affected by experiences. It's about, I think, ensuring in early years that we have some sort of food element into our curriculum, mm-hmm. which I think is becoming more and more a thing these days.
Yeah, one of our settings calls it their baking creations.
Yeah.
And they do it once a week. And I just think that's what a nice way of putting it, because it's not always unhealthy baking, it's different things, but this week, one of the settings did chocolate and courgette brownies.
Ooh.
So, ooh. Yeah, which is quite common.
Okay.
Quite a thing, yeah. So, yes,
I like
you've got
courgette.
That. you've got that sweetness of obviously making chocolate brownies, but it's the fact that you can add vegetables and things like that into what you're doing.
Sure thing.
They've done like the cheese and tomato twists and fruit scones and things like that, or just a fruit salad, because that is still a baking creation, because you're chopping up and it's all the different elements that come into it. But I think by doing that every week, you can introduce different types of food.
Yeah.
So yes, yeah. And that's not including what one of our cooks does on Friday. So it's just it's really nice to see that children can get involved and then they try it for their snack.
Yeah.
So they actually eat what they've made there and then. And it's really important that they see that process from ingredients to putting it together to cooking it and eating it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can then take food into other areas. Like I've got a class coming up about STEM. You know, if we talk about science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and you could bring farming into that, and then you could connect your cultural capital into that and aspects, because bread, where does it come from? You know, and you can go deeper than just, oh, you know, my local supermarket. You could talk about where the wheat comes from. You could talk about where the flour comes from. You could talk about...
And depending on where you are, you might have children that are growing up on farms who will know a little bit more. One of ours is, we had children who were helping with lambing season.
Yep.
So they have got a little bit more of an insight into what the circle of life is, because I think on farms, they don't hide those things. Like meat comes from farms.
It's life though. Why would you hide it?
Exactly. So it's asking those families to help and support in ways that you can share with children.
I'm not saying take your preschool to an abattoir anytime soon, but it's about understanding food production, farming in this year, in the United Kingdom.
Oh, it's when we had chickens and they died. And then, is Miss Donna going to cook it? Probably not this chicken, but you might have chickens today. But it won't be this one. But it was getting the eggs and things like that. But when they died, it was a really difficult conversation with the preschoolers. Like, are we going to have this for lunch? Probably not this chicken.
There wasn't a lot of meat on the bones of them old girls.
No,
they were former battery hens anyway, so they weren't the healthiest when we got them, bless them.
When the staff wanted to call them different chicken-related names, we had Nugget, Kiev, Select. Yeah, that's good fun though. Bless them. But that was that's where it can be difficult, because if you've got animals in your settings, you probably won't eat these ones, but you might. But
I remember one of our settings, we had rabbits at one point and fox got into the hutch.
Oh.
It was a right mess.
I bet it was.
That wasn't a good one either for the kids, bless them.
But circle of life.
It is. And yeah, absolutely. And I think...
we have to learn where our food comes from eventually.
Yeah. And it's introducing us all the things, the way you make foods, the background of it, the history of it. It's such a good life lesson to learn.
Yeah.
And not just assuming that children will know it.
No, they won't.
So I think we've done food. What was your favourite foods growing up? Do you remember?
Well, you asked me about this. I don't know. I'm going to have to ask my mother, but...
It's only because I have a...
so niche.
Corn.
So from Netto, I don't even know if Netto's are still...
That's the one with the dog, isn't it?
Is it a dog? I don't know. It was yellow and black.
I think the sign. Black was the dog, wasn't it?
I don't know.
But we're not sponsored by Netto, but there is other brands available.
But I just specifically remember Netto, and we didn't go to Netto very often, but when we did, my mum would always get... Fricadellians. I don't know where they're from, but I remember.
Is that American?
I don't know. I'll have to ask her. Give her a call.
What were they?
And they were like burgers, but they weren't burgers. God knows what it was, what the meat was.
Obliterated meat.
Yeah. But I remember we didn't live near the Netto. So when we'd go there, I'd be like, oh my God, like Fricadellians. And then,
you sound like a cartoon character, or like a children's.
I know. Maybe I'm remembering wrong. My dad's house, we always would have super noodles, and that's why I do love a super noodle. And then, this is really weird, and I've not told you this. So, you know, IKEA, you can buy the meatballs in frozen.
Yeah, everybody loves horse meatballs.
Yeah. So, I remember that I had a small baking tray that would fit six in specifically, right? And if my mum cooked the IKEA meatballs in any other baking tray, I would know about it. So she's this little, it was like this big, right?
When we were growing up, there was three of you. Would you have two meatballs each?
No, that was mine. Had to be cooked in that one.
You big weirdo.
And mum, ask her next time you see her, because she would literally be like, yeah, the IKEA. And she had to, when I moved out, I took it with me because it was my IKEA meatballs.
Still going strong at the age of 18.
Two or six. Yeah, I had six meatballs. If I wanted more than six, I had to do... batch cooking. and wait for them to go. But I remember if she'd cooked them in like a bigger baking tray, it must be that the juices and the fats would sit and marinate them better than in the tune over there, bigger ones. So yeah, that's kind of my, but yeah, meat, obliterated meat clearly was a favourite of mine growing up.
So everything we just talked about, completely ignore what Emily said.
No, to be fair, fruits and vegetables and things like that were always included in my dinners at home. They were never, I never remember fruit and veg being a big thing. Like my mum never made it a big thing. It was just part of our lives. So that's why that's probably they don't flag up, because they were just norm.
I have a theory that your favourite foods and your experience, this is playing on what we talked about at the beginning of this, but it comes from emotional memories more than the food itself. Like I always remember a meal that always sticks in my head. It's not even something I'll eat nowadays, but you can get...
We saw them in the shop.
Yeah, you can get frozen cod in like packets of like butter sauce. I mean, it sounds horrific as I'm describing it, but it's in like packets of sauce and you sort of put it in the hot water and it boils and that's how it cooks. And I used to have that with super noodles sometimes when I came home from school early, like lunchtime, because I went to school in the same village I lived in. So sometimes, God knows why, so I would have thought my mum would be happy to get me out of the house when school was on. But sometimes, and I say sometimes, probably like two or three times a school year, if that. But I'd go home for lunch. I remember watching TV and sat out. And I always remember, so I remember that meal from that. But I don't think it's the food necessarily, it's the experience and it's the memory.
That's what, yeah, like going to Netto to buy fricadellians and going to IKEA and making them in my little...
And I'm sure everyone listening has some sort of connection with food that's not to do with the food, but it's the food that resonates.
Yeah.
It's like you and your granddad, you'll probably always have fish and chips being...
The chip. We don't call it, it's a chippy.
Oh, yeah, because you eat fish, do you?
So we have a chippy, yeah. Chippy or a Chinese with my granddad. And that is, yeah, that will be something that I remember forever, because when I was doing my college course, I used to go to college on a Thursday. And then when that stopped, I was like, well, my Thursdays are normally taken up anyway. So I would go to my granddad's and spend the evening with him and we'd have a chippy tea and I'd walk and get it. And that's just our thing. But yeah, whenever I think of a chippy, I think of my granddad and that's like a nice...
It's just interesting that the role that food plays in that.
And relationship.
A lot of the time when you talk about it, you think about it, it's actually foods with high fat content.
Yeah.
Because it's the fat content that...
It just sounds like I eat rubbish. I don't. I love fruit and vegetables as well.
It's the fat content that controls and regulates...
Yeah, the emotional.
It has that effect on you. So I don't know, it's just a...
And it's interesting because he's won't mind me saying, he won't even know he won't podcast.
Your granddad won't even know what a podcast is, bless him.
He doesn't eat a lot anymore and he knows that and his diet isn't great.
No, but he has problems with his stomach, doesn't
and
he?
He's 91 this year, so whatever he's doing is working, so it's fine.
Just keep going.
But when I go for dinner, he eats more.
Yeah.
And it might be a social thing because we're both there and never would he have pie and chips, that much food. Without me being there. And it's just interesting because you say like the emotional connection that it brings. On a normal day, I'd probably have like crumpets.
Yeah.
But because I'm there, oh my God. But I stand by this 100%. And anyone who is lucky enough to still have their grandparents are feeders. I go to my granddad's house now and oh my God, I come home and I'm like, we eat so much food. I've had a Magnum. I've had sweets. I've had my dinner.
Again, like, it goes back to the food makes us happy.
Yeah.
As creatures.
I remember as a child though, going to my grandma's house and we'd have, my grandma and granddad at the time, and we'd make our own sandwiches and sit on the floor with our little trays, you know, the bean bags underneath, and you'd sit and we'd eat and watch telly with them. But they're so, like, grandparents are feeders and I stand by this.
But again, it's amazing, isn't it, how much of our memories and our happy memories revolve around food.
Yeah.
It's always the main contributing factor, but it's there.
Going to the local shop to buy a packet of Tic Tacs.
Just Tic Tacs.
Yeah, orange and lime flavour.
They still have pink.
That's what we used to do then.
But yeah, so if you're going
to
take any...
You need to share some family food memories because mine have all just been meat and rubbish.
My funniest of recent years is it goes back to your granddad again over Christmas.
Oh, bless him. He was going through a thing with his stomach and food. Christmas dinner, I'll just have a sandwich. You can imagine my mother's reaction. I've made you a Christmas dinner. You'll eat the Christmas dinner. Whether you like it or not, I'm not making you a sandwich.
Bless his socks. But
oh, yours is a nice one, though. When you used to come over for football.
Oh, what's that?
A green Thai curry waited.
Oh, yeah. Whenever we went football, especially in the winter months, Mum would always make green Thai curry.
Yeah. Yours are so much healthier.
And then what else was it? I can always remember going to the fish and chippy. We used to have a van that used to come around all the different villages. And they always used to have sweets in there.
Oh.
But then again, I got a bad memory of that because I got the sweets one day, and then in the back of our car at the time was one of those, you know, there's lighters, you know, there's electric lighters. Oh, yeah. Stuck my finger in it as a child. And you could smell flesh in the car. It was great.
I remember your mum would say that she'd take you to the chippy on the way home.
Yeah, from swimming.
And from swimming, and you'd get a fish cake and chips, yeah. And she'd find you just falling asleep in it because you were so tired. You just have this little box on your lap and you'd be like, in the box. There's one of yours. It's always chippies.
Or at Christmas, we always have trifle. Always from M&S.
Last year, Ben wasn't feeling very well, but he was determined to eat his trifle. And he stood at the door with this massive trifle and a big spoon. He just looked really sad. Can we share that photo? Because it's really funny.
Emily, I have to eat this trifle.
He was like,
otherwise, it's not Christmas.
But he felt so poorly. Oh, that was funny.
I think I had food poisoning from a few days earlier. Oh. We had like a massive like garland, like pork pie thing, yeah. Didn't we? And it wasn't cooked, I don't think. And everyone who ate it had food poisoning.
But Ben was determined to eat his Christmas trifle.
So if anyone's ever had food poisoning and then like a couple of days later tried to eat a trifle, it's an interesting experience.
Oh, we've gone off a tangent now about food.
We have.
But in general, I think it's introducing foods at different stages and the importance of every type of food.
I think you can split this in half. It's one, the understanding, we don't need to lecture people on this, the understanding of how important food is from a growth, from a physical development point of view, from bone structure, from muscles,
et cetera, mental health.
And then it's secondly, on the other side of the conversation is education and educating children and the role of adults, parents, practitioners, grandparents, and their role in being role models.
Yeah.
And if you... I think you'd be very hard pushed to find a child that comes from a background of people who eat healthy and talk about food in a positive manner, da, da, and then there's a really poor diet. I'm sure it happens.
Yeah.
I'm sure it does. But I think in the general, if parents are listening to this thinking, how do I set my child up for the best and the healthiest future? Just foods, introducing, like you talked earlier about that example, introduce them to as much as you can. Repetition.
I think there are online quite a few families that I've followed that do introduce foods really well. So I think it would be worth me sharing them.
Yeah.
As the week goes on, because I think the way that people do it is really lovely and it might just share ideas on how people might get more confident in it.
And I think the onus comes on as educational settings, as nurseries, childminds, whatever it might be. We play a big role in that. And if families at home are struggling, whether it be financially, whether they're stressed out of their brains because of their jobs, and they get home and... you know, just time takes them by. It's easy to bung something in the oven and then give it to the child because you know you're going to get a quiet, peaceful night. Get it? Like, it's
hard. Those things don't have to be unhealthy all the time.
No, they don't, but sometimes they are.
Yeah.
Chicken nuggets and chips is really easy to do. Like, it happens and, you know, there's no point avoiding it and not talking about the fact that that does happen. That is real life.
Yeah.
I think...
But doing that every now and then, that's not...
No, I agree.
You can do that, yeah.
Absolutely. 100%, you know, 100%. It's not going to be the detriment to your child in any way, shape or form. It happens consistently every night. It's a different conversation.
Depends what it's with, though, and depends on your child's eating and how you got to that point. Because if your child is having fish fingers or chicken nuggets, etc., it depends on the fish fingers and the chicken nuggets that you're buying and purchasing.
Yeah, yes and no. Yes and no. It's still probably highly processed food. It still probably isn't the greatest and it's not varied enough if you're not getting the vegetables in there, the fruits and stuff in there.
Yeah.
No, if you're having chicken nuggets, chips, regardless of how good they are, it's too much of the same thing.
Yeah, but I think it's another conversation of is the child eating? And yes, if they've had that chicken nugget, like we said earlier, for neurodiverse children, is their safe food? And they're adding in fruits and vegetables and have fruit throughout the day as snacks and things like that. So the snacks are healthy, but at dinner time, that's their safe food. You have to weigh up whether child eating or not eating is more important.
That's a very niche example.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But I don't want people to listen to this and think, oh God, like my child's safe food is these things and they shouldn't be having them.
No, I think we're talking about neurotypical
yes.
children. I mean, if you've got neurodiverse children into the conversation, you've got another element then of, I don't want to say complication, but another element to think about and consider, and you've just got to do right by the context and the specific needs of that child. I think if we're talking in general, like we spoke about earlier, it's about a wide range of foods, certain types of foods, repeating it, consistency, and just opening their eyes to the wide worlds and different textures and tastes there is. And that's what I was trying to say is, if we know some children at homes don't get a good diet, that is a fact, unfortunately. That's the world we live in. So what I'm trying to say is, early years settings have such a responsibility to try and provide children with, one, the foods that they're missing, they're not getting at home, and two, then the education, probably even more so the education about food and around food. And you, like I said earlier, you can introduce it across a broad curriculum, whether it be STEM and things like that. I think we talked about food enough.
I think it's just to end on the one food that always blows your mind that children eat in our settings. Couscous. Blows your mind.
How much they love it.
They love couscous.
I don't know, maybe it's just because where we are in the country. Maybe it's in Northamptonshire.
Maybe. Okay, let's wrap up then. I apologise for my coughing throughout this. It has not been too much.
It's been quite good, actually. Your energy levels have perked up.
Yeah, I'll probably crash now. I'm done
for the day.
Done for the day. Enjoy the rest of your week.
Oh, and if you've not yet voted, I still have a poll live on our stories on Instagram.
It will definitely be gone by Monday.
It will be gone by Monday. So I might put it back up again on Monday, just so I look like I know what I'm talking about.
You put it up on Thursday.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's up now.
It is up now.
So if you go now, if you happen to be able to listen to this before it goes live on Monday.
Right, we've gone mad. There might be a poll, there might not. If not, next week we will let you know what is the
outcome
of the poll.
Yeah, hopefully you voted in it.
Hopefully you didn't visit. Have a lovely week, guys, and we'll see you in the next.
Bye.
Bye.